The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, here on the Friday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Hope you're all doing well on this rainy Friday afternoon here in the Auburn Opelika area. It's weird. We're in the studio Friday because Lee Scott football played last night. Yes, that is correct. That is me and Carter. Wednesday morning afternoon, we got the update that Lee Scott's football game was going to be moved from Friday night to last night. And so we were on the road in Selma, Alabama, as Lee Scott took on Morgan Academy. They come away with the 48-6 victory, but not before the downpour of rain. So it was an adventure trying to get packed up and get on the road last night after Lee Scott's big victory on the road yet again. Our Warriors are 3-0. Carter, and a big game next week, but we had a good time last night regardless of the rain.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. The bottom fell out on us there at the very, very end. The
yes,
game
it did.
Ended up getting called with about 6 minutes left, but it was a 48-6 win for Lee Scott, and what, by our math, they've outscored the opponents this year 129-6. Yeah,
not too bad. They gave up their first points on defense last night, so not too bad.
You were upset about
it. I was upset, but not upset at the kids, but just I wanted the streak to keep going
upset
for three games.
At the idea of opposing team scoring.
I know. It's unrealistic expectations. I understand. But Lee Scott, they win last night 48-6. Of course, Auburn High, they will play Jefferson Davis tonight over on the campus of Auburn High, so hopefully they can get their game in. Tons of schools around the state moved their games from tonight to last night due to the incoming weather that's supposed to hit sometime tonight. It's supposed to be raining right now. It's been kind of off and on all day, but regardless, we are here in studio on this Friday afternoon right here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. We have a jam-packed show today. At 2:30, we're going to talk to Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network, get his take on this game tomorrow for Auburn against San Jose State, kind of get his takeaways through week one and this week of practice. And then in the second hour of the show, Jack Hudden from the Auburn High School Sports Network, he will be joining us in studio for all of hour number two, talking ball with us. We love having him on the show, so he will be with us in the second hour. We're going to be talking football, baseball, some more football all day today, and we'd love for you to get in on the action. 334-321-1390 is the number to put you through to us. Call in, give us predictions for Auburn football tomorrow, predictions for any of the other big time games going on in week two in college football, NFL picks if you have those. We'd love to hear those as well. We may try to jump into some of that later on in the show, but again, 334-321-1390 is the number to put you through to us. And before we get into it, it's Friday. The games are being played tomorrow night for SEC. And reminder to get your picks in for the ESPN 106.7 SEC Football Challenge, sponsored by the Orthopedic Clinic, Pepsi, Wickles Pickles, and Johnny Brusco's. Go to ESPNAU.com. Make your picks for who you think are going to win the games around the Southeastern Conference tomorrow. The winner at the end of the week is going to win great prizes, prize packs, 12 packs of Pepsi, gift cards from those great sponsors. And the winner at the end of the season is going to win that 50-inch 4K Ultra Smart TV. So make sure you submit your picks. It closes tonight for week two, so you can go and pick the winner of Alabama, Texas, South Carolina, Arkansas. I'm looking at it right now. Missouri, Kansas State, Wake Forest, Vanderbilt, all the games that SEC teams are a part of, you can go and make your picks. Again, ESPNAU.com. Click on the contest tab. It'll be right there. So make sure you go and submit your picks. And you can see how you stack up with your friends, how you stack up with me and Carter and everybody else around who is involved in this. So make sure you go and do that. It's really fun, really exciting. The ESPN 106.7 SEC Football Challenge. So make sure you go and do that. But Carter, let's jump into week two of college football a little bit, because we'll start in the SEC. There are some big games around the Southeastern Conference. It starts tomorrow, 11 a.m. College game day's there. Alabama and Texas. Not necessarily giving predictions just yet. We're going to do that later on in the show. But this game has just gotten a lot of buzz for all the wrong reasons. It should be a big game. It's one of the biggest home games in Texas history. And yet, Alabama seems to be just the overwhelming favorite by everybody.
Well, it's not going to be close. Like, it's dumb that we made this game day. We turned it into a headline game when it's the fourth or fifth or sixth best game that a ranked team plays in this week. I mean, you have Tennessee at Pitt. You have Kentucky at Florida. You have Baylor at BYU. And for my money, that should be game day. You go to Provo. Go to Provo for a top 25 matchup. That'd be so much fun. This one? This game kicks at 11 on Fox, and it'll be over by 11:45. It's going to be that bad. And if you listen to Sark's comments, he basically tells you that. Talking about how they're playing for the Big 12 championship. This game doesn't define this team. That stuff you say after you lose the game, not before the opening kickoff.
I think this game between Alabama and Texas is, it's interesting because it should be bigger than what it is.
It's game day. Come on.
Well, I'm saying they're trying to make it bigger, but we know what the end result is going to be.
Yes.
I'm not saying that Alabama's going to lose, because I do think Alabama wins this football game, but I think it's going to be your typical Alabama football game. They're better, they're bigger, faster, stronger, better coached, better coaches, better players than Texas. But I think what you're going to see in this game is your typical Alabama football game against a team like this, where the first quarter, maybe even the first half, is going to be competitive. Alabama's going to score some points. You're going to see Texas have a little bit of momentum. They're going to make some plays. Alabama will have a slight lead going into the locker room, may even be by 10 or so points, but Texas is still going to feel like they're in this football game. And then the second half, you're going to see Alabama just put it on them and pull away, and they may win by 30 points. They might just do that. But I do think that with everything that Texas has put on themselves for this game, it is one of the biggest games that Texas has played in their home stadium in their program history. I mean, I just think that's where we're looking at right now. And with the crowd that's going to be there, with game day being there, with Sark in his, second year now at Texas, you have a lot of guys. You have a really, really good quarterback with Quinn Ewers, who is one of the best quarterbacks in the country. Alabama is better, but I do think this is going to be an entertaining ball game. It's not going to be 45-0 after the first quarter like a lot of people think. I just don't think that's going to happen.
Jacob, Quinn Ewers has played one game of college football.
And he's
one
a great game. Quarterback.
And
he is. You can't tell me he's not a good quarterback.
He played La Monroe. That's it. Let's get a sample size before we anoint
he's still
him
a good quarterback.
One of the best quarterbacks
even coming
in
out of
football.
He's still a good quarterback.
Yes, he's a great quarterback prospect.
Okay, so then I give him a little bit of credit, though, that he can do something.
You know who also was a great quarterback prospect? Spencer Rattler.
There's a lot of guys that are great quarterback prospects.
Tate Martell. I mean, we can go down the list. Let him play some team with
the
Pulse.
And that's fine. I'm just saying we should not just sit here and say Alabama by 50. Don't even talk about it, because I think that's just ridiculous in my mind. I think we should at least address it and at least give Texas the chance. Is Texas going to win? No. Are they going to keep it close by the end? Probably not. But I do think it's going to be more competitive than Alabama puts up 50 points in the first 10 minutes and we just turn the channel. Like, I think it's going to be a little bit better than that, but a lot of people don't think so.
I firmly believe that this is going to be the first game where you see what this Alabama team is this year, and I think this team is going to be salty, salty, salty. And I think it's going to start with they're going to jump on this Texas team immediately. They're going to jump on him, and they're going to get up big, I think. And then, yeah, I mean, Saban may not run it up by 40 like we've seen him do against some teams in the past, But I don't see. We're talking about a Texas team that went 5-7 last year.
I agree.
That has played one game coming into this one. The only reason why this game has buzz is because it's two big brands.
And I think one thing
Fox
that's
Fox and ESPN looked at it and said,
right,
hey, big brands, we can get eyeballs on it, so let's make it the primetime Fox game and let's put College Game Day there. But it's
right.
It's not. I don't think it's going to be that great of a game. I really don't.
And I think one thing that's important to point out is a lot of people are saying that Alabama's going to come in and just run the score up and put up 80 points against Texas. I think Nick Saban has a little bit more respect for Texas and for Sark than to do that. Nick Saban is not that type of football coach. He is not. When he is better than you and he has you beat like a drum, he's not going to just do everything in his power to make sure you know it. He's going to beat you, and he's going to make sure that you are beaten,
yeah.
But he's not going to go in there and put – while Alabama's offense may be able to put up 100 points against Texas, they're not going to do it out of respect of Steve Sarkisian and this Texas program. They're just not going to do it.
I mean, I see him getting up by a lot, and then that's where old
and it'll flatten out.
Lets it coast
exactly.
After that.
Exactly.
But I think it'll be interesting to see how this game compares to that Texas A&M game, just because it's the two biggest schools in the state of Texas. Texas coming into the SEC. Both Alabama or former Saban assistants that he's coaching against. One, Texas A&M is a good bit more talented, but I think there might be a little more motivation to put A&M in the dirt. That's something that I want to keep an eye on. I want to compare this game to that Texas A&M game in about a month.
Well, the question that I asked you in the car yesterday as we were driving to call Lee Scott Football, here's the question, and we'd love to hear from you. This is an interesting question, I think. 334-321-1390. With the situations between Alabama, Texas, and then Alabama, Texas A&M, you set the scenes, right? Alabama's traveling to Texas. They're playing the 11 a.m. kick, week two of the college football season, versus when Alabama and Texas A&M play, what, week eight or something like that in the college football season in Tuscaloosa with the offseason feud between Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban. Here's the question I want to ask you, and the listeners, you can give us an answer as well. Which team loses by less to Alabama, Texas A&M or Texas? Which team, or do one of them happen to beat Alabama? I think it's interesting because you talk about comparing these two games. Which team is going to lose by less? Which one keeps it closer between Alabama, A&M, or Texas?
In the car last night, I said Texas because of a talent differential. The more I sit on it, the more I kind of look at these two games, and the more I've looked at what that Texas A&M team was last week, Alabama's going to beat Texas A&M by actually 40. Because that Texas A&M offensive line is not good right now, and you're going up against the best defensive line in college football this year in Alabama in about a month, they're going to tee off on Haynes King. And it's going to be bad. It's going to be ugly. There's added motivation. Will Anderson has said as much. I think that's going to happen. Hey, here's something for you.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's topical, because we've talked about these teams. Alabama has won 53 straight non-conference games.
Okay.
In the regular season, that is. Who was the last loss to?
53 non-conference wins in regular season play. Who was their last loss?
Their last loss in non-conference play.
I don't even know.
Louisiana Monroe in 2007.
I wanted to say that. I really did. I really wanted to say that, but I didn't know if that was the answer or not.
They haven't lost a regular season non-conference game since 2007.
Yeah, I mean, look, Alabama gets up and Saban gets them ready for these games. Some of the other games around the SEC that are catching my eye, Arkansas and South Carolina, hey, that's going to be right here on ESPN 106.7. So if you're in the car looking to catch the radio broadcast, you can catch that game right here on ESPN 106.7. That will be on at 10:30 a.m. tomorrow is when coverage starts, kickoff at 11, so make sure you tune in for that. That is one of five events we have going on ESPN 106.7 this weekend. Starting tomorrow, we have a college football doubleheader, South Carolina at Arkansas beginning at 10:30 tomorrow morning, and then Kentucky at Florida at 5:30 right here on ESPN 106.7. Then on Sunday, we have the NFL. We have two games on that, Ravens at the Jets at 11 a.m., and then Packers at Vikings at 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon. And then to top it all off, Sunday Night Baseball, it's the San Francisco Giants and the Chicago Cubs at 6 o'clock. So all of those games will be right here on ESPN 106.7, so we're proud to be able to bring you those. But that South Carolina-Arkansas game is interesting because South Carolina, is currently a 9-point underdog on the road in Fayetteville, but there's a lot of people giving and showing some love to the Gamecocks on the road with Spencer Rattler because of the defense we saw last week with Arkansas against Cincinnati.
I think Arkansas is the better team of these two. I think they're going to be able to score on South Carolina. I don't think South Carolina is for real. Spencer Rattler last week, more of the same against Georgia State. It's those, you see him, and at moments you're like, man, this guy has the best arm talent in the country. And then there's moments where it's like, what are you thinking? Where are you throwing this ball? Like, why are you making this decision? And it'll be interesting because I know Arkansas has a couple corners that got banged up in that game last week against Cincy. Can they get back healthy? Can they make Spencer Rattler make enough mistakes? Can they trick him into making those dumb decisions that he made at Oklahoma that he made last week when he pushes the ball down the field into double coverage, triple coverage, that just like it's like, what are you doing? When he does that, that's when Spencer Rattler's at his worst. That's why he got benched at Texas or in the Cotton Bowl against Texas last year and opened the door for Caleb Williams to take his job. It's because he started pushing the ball down the field and making dumb decisions with it. Do we see a more mature version of Spencer Rattler? I don't think so. I'm not sold on it, and that's why I like Arkansas in this game.
To sort of push back on that a little bit, though, I could see where Spencer Rattler has a little bit of a coming-out game in this game against Arkansas on the road just because of what we saw Arkansas's defense was last week against Cincinnati. Arkansas may have won that game by a touchdown. Cincinnati had about five different chances to win this football game on the offensive side because the Arkansas defense, they gave up big plays. They had guys running wide open wide receivers for Cincinnati. The Bearcats dropped two or three touchdown passes where Arkansas wasn't anywhere near the guys. And so could this be a time where Arkansas's defense has to lock down and be ready to go and be able to defend Spencer Rattler throwing and running the football because we know he wants to do both? I could see where Spencer Rattler and this South Carolina offense have a little coming out party. Not that they are just the best thing you've ever seen, but Arkansas's defense last week against Cincinnati worries me a little bit coming into this football game.
That's fair, but I mean, when you look at these two quarterbacks, I trust KJ Jefferson to not turn the ball over. I trust him enough to use his legs. I trust him enough in the passing game. He looked really good last week to me. I don't trust Spencer Rattler. I don't trust Spencer Rattler at all. I don't trust his attitude that we have seen in QB1 and all that stuff. I don't trust him with the decisions he makes on the field. Until he proves me wrong, I'm going to take Arkansas in this game.
I think it comes down to KJ Jefferson. I think it comes down to his performance, whether he turns the ball over or not, and whether he scores touchdowns and whether he makes plays with his legs for Arkansas at the quarterback position. We're off and running here on the Friday edition of On the Line. Call in 334-321-1390. What do you think about the games coming up this weekend? We'd love to hear some of your picks and predictions. 334-321-1390.
You are On the Line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Back here on the Friday edition of On the Line, Jacob Goins and Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Well, after the game on ESPN 106.7 is back, catch On the Line's Carter Bird, our one and only Carter Bird, and Auburn High sportscaster Jack Hutton after every Auburn University football game this season. They'll provide post-game analysis and take your calls live from the ESPN 106.7 studio after the game is presented by Urgent Care Clinic, open 7 days a week, no appointment necessary, and no wait time. Get better with urgency at Urgent Care Clinic in Auburn. That's the After the Game show on ESPN 106.7. That will be starting up tomorrow after Auburn plays San Jose State. The guys will go live right after the game, so make sure you tune in right here on ESPN 106.7. That'll be from tomorrow all the way through the football season. We also do it in basketball season as well, so it's been a very popular show in the past. It's going to be our own Carter Bird and Jack Hutton, who is a part of the Auburn High School broadcast team, so should be a great show with those two guys. Looking forward to that getting started tomorrow, but let's head to the phone lines. 334-321-1390. Terry, happy Friday, man.
Happy Friday, guys. How y'all doing?
We're doing great. Right, what you got?
Yeah, Carter's gonna be a late night tomorrow night for you guys, ain't it?
Oh yeah. It's gonna be fun though. I'm looking forward to it, Terry.
Great. Guys, that's Jake. By the way, Jacob, that's an awful awesome lineup. You're telling me about being down here now in this area. I can take off that a little bit, and I can listen to some NFL games, and
I can
get even more critical.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're excited to be able to bring, like I said, we have five different games going on this weekend, two college tomorrow, two NFL on Sunday, and some Sunday night baseball to wrap it all up.
Yeah. Yep. Guys, it just keeps bothering me. It sticks in my craw that we know that how dominant Alabama and Georgia are, and that's obvious. But Tennessee's headed such a positive way, and so is Arkansas. And we're discussing a two-quarterback system working. Why won't people let that go? Two-quarterback systems never work. And people are discussing that in Auburn, Finley, and Ashford. I know they don't have a similar skill set. I know they're totally different guys. But my goodness gracious, a lifetime. Auburn won 11 games with throwing the ball 12 times, 14 times a game. Is this a situation where Brian Harsin is more in love with what he wants than what he needs? Because what he needs right now is a guy that might save his job.
It very well could be, Terry. And I think also we have definitely proposed the option and the chance that Brian Harsin could be running this quote-unquote two-quarterback system very temporarily to be making a change at the quarterback position. That's something we definitely could see, and it's something that Carter and I have talked about a little bit, where maybe these first two or three weeks you have this two-quarterback system waiting for Robbie Ashford to get just a little bit better and more comfortable to take over the starting role. Not saying that's what's happening, because we don't truly know, but I'm with you. I don't think a two-quarterback system throughout SEC play is going to get Auburn 8 or 9 wins like Brian Harsin needs.
Yeah, see, I'm a stickler for that. I don't care what he did in Idaho. Idaho is not the Southeastern Conference. And two quarterback systems have never worked. Yeah, there's been instances, and I know somebody's going to bring up the Chris Leak, Tim Tebow stuff and all, and some others, but it has never worked as a whole. It just hasn't. You got to have one main guy who runs the system, and you got to be different. And maybe could be that Brian Harsin's using these first two games as ways to determine some of that. Because I really believe when the year's done, T.J. Finley's going to be 13th quarterback. The more progression Ashford makes and Calzada learns the playbook, I think they're both going to pass him. I do. I can't emphasize that enough, guys, because just because he gets everybody lined up in the right position and gets them in the right play, something happens to that kid when the snap happens. I don't know what it is.
Yeah,
I'm not qualified to say.
And the problem is, you know, all the eyes are going to be on him tomorrow playing San Jose State, because if the same mistakes happen tomorrow that happened last week, I just don't know if he takes the snaps against San Jose or against Penn State. I just don't know if he is the first guy on the field at the quarterback position. Now, I expect TJ to have a better game tomorrow than he did in week one.
I'm very interested to see if Zach Calzada actually takes snaps on Saturday, just because I think there may have been a plan to have him do that, but I think the delay screwed everything up. It screwed up. Like, I just don't think the defense came out the same way.
I think it changed the
way that they were going to use Ashford coming out of it. I think they're probably going to put the ball in the air some. They ended up not. I'm interested to see what that goes on. But Terry, I'm curious. You're talking about two quarterback systems. What's your opinion of Michigan and what Jim Harbaugh's doing up there? Because he made the playoff with two quarterbacks last year.
He made the playoffs, but he got knocked out, didn't he?
I mean, he did. So it's an accomplishment to get there, is it not? I mean, any Auburn fan right now would take making the playoff in a heartbeat.
Yeah, but how long has the playoffs been in play now?
Since 2014,
and they've done it once, right?
Yeah.
Ohio State's dominated that conference, but yeah, I mean, there's plenty of teams that haven't made the playoff yet.
I agree, but like I said, even a broken clock is right twice a day.
It is interesting what Michigan is doing, because last week they started one quarterback. Tomorrow they're going to start the other quarterback, and they're going to see and judge them based off those two games and figure out which one they're going to move on with.
Yeah,
I just don't like the fact that this is being even discussed, because it's not worked with any kind of consistency. Yes, has it worked in instances? Yes, it has. And somebody calls up and brings up Brian Harsin's success out in Idaho. That's fine and dandy out there. But this is the Southeastern Conference. You don't have Nick Saban that you're in and Kirby Smart in that conference. He's not even being close to them two.
I agree, Terry. I agree with you, my friend. I don't think a two-quarterback system is what Auburn needs to be successful this season. Hey, we appreciate the call. Have a great weekend. We're up against the break, man.
You too, guys. Take care.
That is Terry here on the Friday edition of On the Line. I'm with him, man. I just don't think in the Southeastern Conference right now, in the position Auburn's in, a two-quarterback system with T.J. Finley and Robbie Ashford is not going to win Brian Harsin enough football games to save his job. You need to go with one or the other, and by Penn State or Missouri or LSU, however long it takes, before you go to Athens, you need to have your quarterback. And you need to run with them for the rest of the season, because running two or three different quarterbacks just isn't going to work in the SEC. It's just not. I agree.
Yeah, we haven't seen a true two quarterback system work in a long time, and
especially
the SEC.
At Auburn.
I mean, I guess the closest thing to it was when Tua took over at Alabama. You saw bits and pieces of Jalen Hurts.
I wouldn't even call that though.
But it's not even like it wasn't even a true two quarterback system. They handed that thing over to Tua for the most part. I mean, I can't think of the last truly successful two quarterback. You may have to go back to Chris Leak and Tim Tebow.
Mm-hmm.
No, actually, LSU made a daggum national championship game with two way below average quarterbacks.
Yeah.
What is it, Jordan Jefferson? And
Jefferson, and who was the other one?
I'm drawing a blank on who the other one was. And then they go into they had a riff before that kickoff on who was going to start that game. And then Alabama, they don't cross midfield.
I just again, in Auburn's position where the SEC West is, T.J. Finley and Robbie Ashford as a two quarterback system is just not going to get it done in 2022. We're going to talk to Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network when we come back here on the Friday edition of On the Line.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into the Friday edition of On the Line, Jacob Goins and Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Excited to welcome in Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. Brad, I know it's a busy time for you with game day being tomorrow, but how are you feeling as we're now entering week two of the college football season?
Jacob, Carter, I'm excited to be with you. We're feeling good about week two, and the excitement is contagious, so we're fired up. We're ready.
Well, Brad, let's talk about week one last week before we get into tomorrow's matchup for Auburn football against San Jose State. We saw Auburn take care of business last week against Mercer. Even with the rain delay, they finally were able to pull out the victory and defeat Mercer in week one. Your takeaways from Auburn football's first game of the 2022 season?
I thought it was really clean, Jacob. I thought it looked like a team that had been preparing for months for a season opener. You didn't see a lot of procedural penalties. I mean, it was just a fairly clean, crisp game. It wasn't penalty-free, but it was clean. You saw an offense come out and score on their first touchdowns on the first drives of the season, and they took a 28-0 lead in the first half, just efficient and effective, and they wanted to come out and run the ball well, and they did, to the tune of 285 yards. We got to see both quarterbacks, and both were effective in a lot of ways in the game. You saw a little preview of what an offense can look like with TJ and Robbie playing to their strengths, complementing each other well, and they were effective. So, and I thought you started to see the questions answered about who's next. Who's the next linebacker to fill in with the loss of Jacoby McClain and Chandler Wooten? And Riley has 15, 16 tackles. Nehemiah Pritchett has a couple of pass breakups as we start to answer the question, who takes over for Roger McCreary? So I thought as first things go, it was as positive a result as you could hope with not a lot of glaring holes, I didn't think, left over after game one. Again, considering it was a game one, and with all due respect, against Mercer.
Brad, last night on Tiger Talk, Harsin talked about how maybe this week you'll see some of the younger faces, some of the fresh faces, make a few more plays. Last week, in the passing game, it seemed to be a lot of those experienced returning guys that were the guys that we saw catching passes. Do you expect to see some of those newer guys that you've heard so much about through fall camp make more of an impact starting this week, like Corb Moore, Camden Brown, those guys like that?
Yeah, Carter, I do. Those two guys specifically. I think those two guys, you know, a guy like Xavion Capert was not listed on the team, but he saw action in the second quarter of the game last week. It was a few more of the veteran guys. I expect to see Cam Brown, Corey Moore getting more of those snaps. Again, now the game's got to play out, but even philosophically, right, we saw Ike Hilliard and Eric Ebron last week. They were rotating a lot of guys in that receiving core. A lot of guys were on the field, different formations, different play calls. For a first week with a somewhat vanilla approach, I thought from the rotation at the receiver spot and some of the pre-snap motions wasn't really all that vanilla after all. There were a lot of moving parts for something that was a little more, a little more basic for a game one. Yes, the short answer after all of that to say I do. Yeah, I expect more Brown or more this week at those receiver spots.
We're speaking with Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here on the Friday edition of On the Line. Brad, as you prepare for this Week 2 matchup, the win is not really the question mark here, but the eyes are going to be on this quarterback battle. That is still a battle, as we've been discussing all week long here on the show. What do you expect to see from TJ Finley and Robbie Ashford at this quarterback position as we enter Week 2?
Yeah, I've put it this way, in when we use the term battle, let's talk about what that is exactly. And now Carter and I have so many conversations about linguistics and semantics of words and phrases. So when we say battle, what are we talking about? We're not talking about two guys who are going to go out in armor and fight to the death. We're talking about guys who are competing to take primary snaps, but they're competing on the same team in an effort to help the 10 guys around them have success on offense to help the team win a football game. And I've used this analogy a couple of other places this week. Have you guys ever had a bacon-wrapped filet? Have you ever had bacon-wrapped shrimp?
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's delicious, right? Why do you need bacon if you already have a primary protein? Well, why wouldn't you need it? It enhances the meal.
Yeah, make it taste a little bit better.
Makes it taste a little bit better, right? Nothing wrong with the filet. Nothing wrong with shrimp the way that it is. But, well, you add some bacon around it, little sizzle, little extra flavor, and it enhances it. I don't see these guys. Yeah, I don't see Robbie and TJ working in a contentious way or competing in a contentious way with each other. They're playing for Auburn. So I think we're going to continue to see TJ as the primary protein. He's the quarterback, the starting quarterback on the team. But when you have a player with a little extra sizzle, a little extra flavor, can give you a little extra flair on offense, and Robbie clearly has that, and we didn't get a taste of it in the spring. Didn't get a taste of it in preseason camp because quarterbacks aren't live. But his game speed is really high level. I mean, pads on, making moves, angles wrong, defenders taking bad angles. He adds something to the offense that you can't really keep on the sidelines. So, again, when we talk battle, remember they're on the same team trying to help Auburn win football games, and sometimes that's going to happen when both guys are on the field at the same time.
Brad, kind of switching to the other side of the ball, last week we've heard so much coming into that Mercer game about this defensive line, how they're going to be basically the leaders of this Auburn defense. You didn't get a ton of production in terms of quarterback pressures, quarterback sacks, and part of that is the way that Mercer ran their offense, so getting the ball out quickly, moving the quarterback. This week against a San Jose State team that gave up a good bit of sacks, what, it was about seven?
Seven.
Should we expect to see guys like Eku Leota and Derek Hall start to make that significant impact that maybe we were looking for in week one?
Yes, is the short answer there. The two starting guards for San Jose State are about 265 pounds each. That's not going to do it against a team like Auburn. That's not going to do it, frankly, against a lot of teams. Three of their five starting linemen had their first game experience last week against Portland State. So, there's something to be said for doing it for a first time and now having that comfort level and knowing better what to expect. But I think you hit the nail on the head. Mercer last week had a moving pocket. They took their quarterback out of that line of fire it was a game going in where you didn't really expect defensive linemen to have eight or nine tackles in the game.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little more traditional set scheme by San Jose State. The quarterback was sacked seven times by Portland State. If Auburn, this is a game where if Auburn doesn't generate some of that pressure and San Jose State hasn't completely changed their offensive scheme in order to protect the quarterback and maybe protect and shield the lack of size from the two guards in particular, then you raise an eyebrow at that. I fully expect the defensive line to be more involved and for there to be more tackles for loss, more sacks in this game Saturday.
We have Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network on the phone here on the Friday edition of On the Line. Brad, as you and Andy and all the guys with the Auburn Sports Network have been doing your game prep for tomorrow as Auburn takes on San Jose State, you just talked about the defense a little bit, but what is something that you have learned about this San Jose State team as they come into Jordan-Hare Stadium tomorrow night?
That their receivers are really, really good. Two of their first three, and that's really how they had whatever success they were able to garner offensively was because of the experience, the talent of the receivers, and that's a matchup that I'm going to watch and see, particularly if you look at a position group. Their defensive line is good in their 3-4 scheme. Their linebackers are pretty good. They've got a legit Nagurski Award candidate at one of their linebacker spots. But maybe outside of that, you look at the wide receivers, and that's going to be a good test as a unit for Auburn's secondary as the level of competition continues to ramp up. Between their three starting receivers, who are all 6'2 or taller, two of them transferred in from Nevada, I think the three of them have a combined 30 touchdowns and about 3,600 yards receiving in their collegiate career.
Wow.
So, yeah, these are matchups where you don't just have one corner who's going to do the job and then everything's locked down. This is corners, this is safeties. This is where pressuring the quarterback comes into play. These receivers for San Jose State, it's easy to respect them when you look at their numbers and see what they've done, and you just look at their size. So that's one of the matchups that I'll be watching tomorrow and interested to see how Jalen Simpson and Nehemiah Pritchett at all back there in the secondary are able to perform against them.
Brad, switching sports here. 2 days ago, the SEC basketball schedule dropped for Auburn. What stuck out to you? I mean, I see a back-to-back road trip for Kentucky and at Alabama, and then you also have a at Tennessee and at a dangerous Texas A&M team. I just want to know what sticks out to you.
Well, it's nice that you get the cupcakes in Tuscaloosa after the Kentucky game.
Yeah.
So that's good. No, I'm kidding. Before that goes viral, I've not studied the schedule in depth all that much as we've kind of prepared for everything this weekend, but so I'll be a little bit evasive in that and say that the level that Bruce Pearl has this team with the recruiting, with talent acquisition, and really it doesn't matter at this point who he loses in the offseason. He's reloading every year. And what that means is, you know, teams circle you on the schedule. You're a big game everywhere you go. You're in big environments all year long in conference play. Everybody's gunning for you. And so, you know, the names on the schedule may change, but they're a team that is going to be tempered for those kinds of tests at the end of the season, middle mm-hmm. of the season. Doesn't matter. I think they're well tempered at this point as a program.
So, Brad, I know you spent some time with the Michigan broadcast team at one point. Well, this week they welcome a Hawaii team that lost at home by 53 to Vanderbilt in week zero. Should we expect Michigan to put a very similar performance, if not a better performance, together with their quarterback J.J. McCarthy making his first start of the season?
Yeah, because he's out there hungry. He's got something to prove. It's his show now. So it's almost like another season opener for Michigan.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, McCarthy's the quarterback, but you got the other 10 guys on the field, too, who know there's another quarterback, you know, who's in that battle for Michigan. So they will sort of treat that, I think, like a game one. Yeah, I think that'll get up. I mean, they beat Colorado State, 51-7 or something like that last
pretty
week
easy.
Michigan did.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Colorado State might be Hawaii 51-7 if the two played. So, Yeah, that's got the chance to be about as ugly as one can get.
Well, Brad, we appreciate you coming on the show and giving us your time. Again, I know it's busy with you getting ready for the game tomorrow. Let everybody know where they can watch or listen to Auburn versus San Jose State on the Auburn Sports Network.
Well, yeah, I would encourage people to go to auburntigers.com and find the local affiliate near you, because I understand we're on some competing stations here on the line. So we'll just encourage you to go find the affiliate nearest you. You can also watch the broadcast. This is a little second screen experiment experience that we're doing now. You can watch the guys in the booth call the game. You can watch the Tiger Tailgate Show special guest starting at 3:30 tomorrow afternoon. You can go to the Auburn Tigers Facebook page. You can also go to the Auburn Tigers YouTube channel and watch those shows take place, or watch those broadcasts live as they happen. And that's been kind of a fun way for sort of the second experience with Auburn football and with our broadcast.
Well, Brad, again, we appreciate you coming on and taking the time. Y'all have a great game and a great broadcast tomorrow, my friend.
Thank you, guys. War Eagle, have a great day.
War Eagle to you, too, appreciate as well. It, Brad. That's Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network here on the Friday edition of On the Line. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up with some Atlanta Braves talk here on this Friday afternoon.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Friday edition of On the Line, Jacob Goins and Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Big thank you to Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network for joining us on this Friday afternoon to preview tomorrow's game against San Jose State, talking about the Tigers, talking about San Jose State, and of course the quarterback battle. And he had a good explanation of what the quarterback battle really means. Had some food references in there. It was a great interview. So glad to talk to Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. Reminder that in hour number two, we're going to have Jack Hutton from the Auburn High School Sports Network broadcast team joining us here in studio for the entire second hour, talking all things Auburn football, all things college football, and so much more. But Carter, let's talk about some baseball here for the next couple of minutes. And we normally talk the Braves, and I do want to talk to them for a second, but the rule changes that the MLB announced today for 2023, I don't know if you've seen these yet, but they're making three major rule changes in 2023. They're adding a pitch clock, they're making the bases bigger, and they're banning the shift, the infield shift. One of these I like, two of these I do not. Can you guess which one I like and the two that I don't?
Well, I know you like the pitch clock, and I know you hate the shift stuff.
Well, there you go. You nailed it. The pitch clock is good. I'm fine with the pitch clock being added, and it's a different clock depending on the situation. It's a little bit of a, I think it's like a 15, I have to look it up again. I think it's a 15-second pitch clock when there's nobody on base, and a 20-second pitch clock if there's guys on base, and depending on where they are on the bases, it's a little bit different too. Once they learn that, it'll be fine, and I'm fine with that to kind of get the game going a little bit. I'm fine with that because pitchers can learn, pitchers can get that in their minds, and that's fine. Banning the infield shift is ridiculous. I know why they're doing it, okay? I do. I know why they're doing it, because Major League Baseball wants more offense, because that's what's exciting and that's what gets fans to actually turn on a baseball game on TV and not want to just rip their eyes out, because it's baseball on TV. It's not that exciting. Going to the games is great. Yeah. So I know why they're trying to ban, and now successfully banning the infield shift, because it knocks down offense, and it stops players from hitting, because it's a strategy, and the players and teams figured out, well, if we just move this guy over here, this guy hits it over here more often, we're just going to get him out more often. It makes sense. I compared it to, and I always have, and I always will, I compare the infield shift in baseball. Trying to ban that is like banning the full court press in basketball. It doesn't make any sense, because you're banning a strategy. I know why they're doing it. I just don't like it. And then making the bases bigger, I don't know. I guess I'm kind of indifferent about it. It's safer.
It's safer.
So
it's basically all it is it changes place at first base. It's
come and make so much impact on the, like, when they're stretching out for it?
No, it's when the throw is up that first baseline, mm-hmm. you're at risk for collisions,
gotcha,
injuries.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
This lessens that to a degree because there's more room, and you're less likely to have scenarios where the runner and the first baseman's feet are both on the bag, and you roll up, can break an ankle, do something like that, any weird stuff like that. It lessens that. It'll be interesting. I think it'll be a good change, making the bases bigger.
But it also makes it easier for runners who are stealing second and third to get on base, because now there's a bigger base to get your hand on. If you're sliding, yes, there's bigger base to get to before you get tagged. So it helps the offensive side of baseball.
You have 6 inches fewer to run too, which when you have bang bang plays like that, when it comes down to
a couple of inches,
that can be a big deal. I mean, you might see a very significant increase of stolen bases just from all of these things. It's easier to be safe. There's more room to maneuver your hand around tags. Everything. I mean, I like these changes from the aspect that they're going to make the game shorter, because that's the big complaint with baseball, is that sometimes when you get these Red Sox-Yankees games, they can last four and a half hours, and that's too long. Find a way to make the game shorter. Find a way to generate more offense and more action. And that's why I don't have as much of an issue with – I don't love it, but I don't have as much of an issue with banning the shift. I think it's for the long-term health of bringing action and excitement to the game of baseball, it's going to be good. Although it does lessen the value of true contact hitters that can spray it around the diamond, because those players right now have a value that, I mean, you can see it when teams like the Yankees can't, if Aaron Judge isn't hitting a home run, if the team's not healthy and hitting home runs, they can't score. When Pete Alonso's not scoring and producing runs for the Mets, sometimes they get stalled out and they can't score. I mean, we talked about it with Lindsey Crosby the other day, and I mean, it'll be interesting to see how these changes affect baseball.
But isn't it a coincidence, or it's probably not a coincidence, that all three of these changes hurt pitchers and they help the offense? I don't know. I'm not 100% in favor of the changes, but it's Major League Baseball. What do you expect? Hour number one officially in the book. Stay tuned. We got a whole lot more college football talk in hour number two.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line. You're on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika, sports leader. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, here on the Friday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Hope you're all doing well on this rainy Friday afternoon. The studio is full. Jacob Goins, Carter Bird, and Jack Hudden from the Auburn High School Sports Network joining us for all of hour number two. Jack, you've got a game to get ready for later on, but we appreciate you stopping by, brother. How are you?
Gents, I'm well. How are you guys?
We are good, man. Right. We are doing well. We don't have a game tonight. Lee Scott's game was last night. Of course, it got moved from tonight due to the rain. We ended up getting rained on anyway, so it was a disaster near the end. But Lee Scott wins. They're 3-0 now.
At one point, our tent was collapsing under the weight of the rain.
Well, believe it or not, I actually heard you guys' narration of that event. So I was driving down some road. I can't remember where I was, but I turned it on, and that was right when Jacob started going, "Oh, and Carter, you better cover us up right now. Yeah. Man, we're getting rained on."
It was a combination of Carter cover up the equipment, Carter holding up the tent, moving the camera, and then with about 5 minutes to go, I said, "All right, We're calling it. We got to go.
There was a moment when it started to get bad where the tent was about to blow away. I'm holding it here. The camera's resting on my leg, and I'm trying to navigate the camera with my right hand, and it was just a little chaotic on the stream.
And we turn around, and there's about 20 Lee Scott parents standing behind us under our tent because it became a flood.
Behind us.
And so, yeah, like 5 minutes to go, Lee Scott scores a touchdown as the rain starts falling. Yep. I'm still calling the game, and I said, all right, we're calling this thing. We got to go. It is pouring down rain. So we ended the broadcast. But
and Lee, it was probably helpful that Lee Scott was ahead by a lot then.
Yes.
Was like, you're not missing much here.
Right.
Folks.
Yeah. They went up 48-6. And so the refs, they called it. We called it. It was a very quick ending.
They're up 41-0 at half. I mean, they put up 21 points in the first, what? Six minutes. 52 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. Lee Scott looking good. But of course, Jack, you are part of the Auburn High School Sports Network, and you guys have a game tonight against Jefferson Davis. Supposed to be raining tonight. We'll see. Hopefully, you guys get the game in. Quickly, before we start talking about Auburn University, what's it been like so far for Auburn High this season?
Man, I've enjoyed it. This has been my first year with Auburn High School radio. Football. And so I think when we started, it was kind of a different job because I'm producing for it now rather than doing play-by-play like I was used to. And I had never really produced before, but kind of been learning on the spot the last few weeks, and it's been a lot of fun. I've gotten to work with Scott Bagwell and Rob Pate, who have both been just tremendous. We're looking forward to another really good one tonight. Jeff Davis coming in 1-2 in the region, so Auburn probably the favorite tonight. But we'll see how things shake out.
Well, you guys will get started at what, 6:30 kickoff at 7? Is that correct?
That's correct.
On Wings 94.3, our sister station here at Auburn Network. So make sure you tune in for that. Auburn High School versus Jeff Davis. It'll be at home, but if you want to avoid the rain, make sure you tune in on Wings 94.3. Broadcast starts at 6:30, and the game will be at 7 o'clock. Scott Bagwell, Rob Pate, and Jack Cudden from the Auburn High School Sports Network. And reminder, since we have both of you in the studio, after the game on ESPN 106.7, is back. Catch our own Carter Bird and now our Auburn High sportscaster Jack Cudden. After every Auburn University football game this season, they'll provide post-game analysis and take your calls live from the ESPN 106.7 studio. After the game is presented by Urgent Care Clinic, open 7 days a week, no appointment necessary, and no wait time. Get better with urgency at Urgent Care Clinic in Auburn. So you guys will be doing that starting tomorrow. It'll be a late night tomorrow night, but looking forward to you guys doing that. I think it's going to be a great show. You guys are going to go live right after Auburn football ends their game against San Jose State, and you guys will be live every Saturday right after the game taking calls. It's a very, very popular show here in the area, so looking forward to you guys getting underway with that. But let's jump into this conversation about Auburn football, because they get the win against Mercer week one. Now they have San Jose State in week two. Jack, your takeaways from Auburn's win against Mercer in week one, because we have not gotten to hear your takeaways on it yet.
Yeah, so I, most of the conversation is going to be around the quarterback. So, excuse me. It's TJ Finley and Robbie Ashford is going to get most of the, the conversation around it. But I don't think that enough people are talking about how much better Tank Bigsby looks from last season. I don't think we've seen a fully healthy Tank Bigsby yet. And the dude's leaner. The dude's got a little bit more muscle on him now. Like, that dude's going to have a huge season this year, I think. Already up to, what is it, like 140 yards so far
this
year?
Yeah, something like that. Well, I think he's one of the best running backs in college football. I mean, not just the SEC, but in college football as a whole.
I mean, his legs look significantly bigger this year to the point that it creates this weird, optical illusion with him, where his upper body looks tiny because his legs are so daggum big, and he was so smooth in that opener. You saw him making those cuts left and right, just making dudes miss. He had that one where he did a swim move on a guy and had the ball go up over his helmet, and it looked so smooth and so effortless. I think we're about to see the best Tank Bigsby we've seen in his Auburn career, and I think it's great that he has Jarquez Hunter there with him. So we don't see a situation like 2017 where it felt like Kerryon Johnson got run to the ground. You have two guys who can split the load there and keep them both fresh. And you also have Damari Austin, who's starting to make his way into that rotation. May not be a huge share of the carries, but he's starting to get in there.
334-321-1390 is the number to put you through to us. We'd love to hear from you. Your predictions for tomorrow as Auburn takes on San Jose State, your predictions for any of the Week 2 college football matchups, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Talking about these running backs, Tank Bigsby, again, he literally is one of the best running backs in all of college football. And we heard throughout fall camp that Tank Bigsby, this is from the coaches now, they told us that Tank had gotten bigger, faster, stronger, and was just overall better than he was last year. And we sat here and we're like, how is that possible? Like, how does somebody like Tank Bigsby, who dominated the SEC and was the go-to guy for Auburn last year, how does a guy like that get better? But yet, he has. And then he has the guy like Carter brought up with Jarquez Hunter right behind him, who I've said it multiple times on this show, he could start anywhere in the SEC, and I firmly believe that.
Yeah, definitely so. And I think the other thing that they both do really well, and we didn't see Jarquez do it very much against Mercer, but we saw it a lot last year. I remember a time in the Ole Miss game, we caught a touchdown pass, but they're trying to get them out in space as receivers now. And maybe not receivers, but more so like they're trying to put them outside and say, okay, we're going to throw a screen pass to you. We're going to trail you out of the backfield. We saw some of that against Mercer. And that's why I think that the offensive staff is doing a good job this year of mixing it up a little bit from the standpoint of we want to get the ball into the running back's hands. How do we do that? More than just handing it off to him. We saw the option play with Robbie Ashford in the motion where he pitched it to Tank, which is one of the examples that I thought of when first kind of looking into these running backs. So I really like the creativity that's going on. Looking forward to seeing kind of just about that option play. What's going to come out of that? Is there going to be a pass off of that? Is it just eye candy for everyone else? That'll be cool to see.
Well, I think it brings up, you literally have so many options with Tank Bigsby, Jarquez Hunter, Robbie Ashford with running the football. And that's why I think so many people have wanted Robbie Ashford to be the starting quarterback, because of the different threats that he brings to you on the football field. It is that sort of Nick Marshall-esque that we talked about earlier on in the week, where with Robbie Ashford taking snaps at the quarterback position, if he becomes that accurate passer, because I haven't seen enough to believe that he has yet based off of what we were seeing and hearing from fall camp, but if he turns into that accurate passer and a consistent passer, then you have to worry about Robbie Ashford throwing the football, Robbie Ashford running the football, or Robbie Ashford giving it to Tank Bigsby, who is going to beat whoever is running in front of him. So that is why I think so many Auburn fans are calling for Robbie Ashford to be the quarterback, because of the excitement and the difference that he brings to this Auburn offense.
But the passing sample size has been very, very small so far.
We only
saw him throw 7 passes. I still just have this feeling that we were going to see him throw more before the delay. I just felt like that made everything weird. I think you'll see him throw it more. He will throw it more and earlier tomorrow than he did last week. It's something that you and I talked about when this quarterback battle was raging on in fall camp. It's how close does Robbie Ashford have to get in terms of a passer that his running ability, his ability to use his legs, tips the scales in his favor and it becomes Robbie Ashford's job. I think that's going to be something that we keep an eye on as the season progresses. What does he look like as a passer? Is he improving? How much can he continue to close that gap? And then at some point, do we end up seeing some sort of change? I don't know.
I think it would have to be if Robbie, and again, don't take this the wrong way, and I'm not saying that TJ Finley is just the best thrower we've ever seen, but if Robbie Ashford is able to get to the same level of TJ Finley, at least throwing the football, you would have to think that Robbie Ashford would take over the starting job, because if he can do everything that TJ Finley can do, plus be a threat running the football, wouldn't you think he would become the starter just because of how much more of a threat he is at the quarterback position?
Yeah, it brings you another dimension in there, because let's say you have TJ Finley out there. If you have TJ Finley plus this explosive runner back there, then you've got a better quarterback. And I think anybody on the team would tell you that.
And when you play these teams that you have coming up on the schedule, like Georgia and Alabama, I think an explosive dual threat quarterback is something that can help level the playing field when talent-wise, when athletically you're outmatched, especially when you play a team like Alabama at the end of the year that has, you can make an argument, the best rush defensive end, and then maybe, a top 5 rush defensive end on the other side,
mm-hmm.
in Dallas Turner and Will Anderson. When you have that, the ability to use your legs and run kind of helps slow them down because they can't just pin their ears back and get after the quarterback in the passing game.
Yeah, and you mentioned kind of the talent difference there, and I think that there is one. I mean, you can't, you know, everybody wants to kind of say, okay, well, Auburn should be as competitive. They're not. They're not right now. It's because they're not as talented. But if you gotta do something, right? So you gotta have some sort of, and I'm not saying go full on trickeration and, you know, doing laterals and everything like that, but you have got to do something different if you're Auburn. You can still compete with these teams. You're just not quite on the same level of talent that they are.
Well, it's like way back in the summer, I think it was the summer, Carter, I don't think you were here yet. It was, I believe it was Terry, or maybe even a different caller that we had on the show, just talking about and bringing up the point where right now, where Auburn stands as a football program, you cannot line up man for man, pound for pound with Alabama and Georgia and expect to win the football game. You just can't do it. You're not there yet. You can, and if you win over the next few years, you can get to that point. But in the year 2022, if you line up against Alabama in the Iron Bowl and say, we're going to run right at them and just hope we can beat them pound for pound, man for man, you're going to lose the football game.
And this gets back to recruiting and the talent you bring in. There's never been a national champion since they've been tracking what is the blue chip ratio for the percentage of your roster that is 4- and 5-star players. There's never been a national champion that has had less than 50%. Auburn sitting in, they are above that threshold at 54%. They are, of the teams that are above that list, they are the lowest. But there is a, so that used to be the tier that could win a national championship. Now they're starting to become a second tier. And it's Alabama, Ohio State, and Georgia. Georgia has 77% blue chippers, which is, there's a 6% gap to Oklahoma in fourth. Ohio State has 78% blue chippers. And then get ready for this. This is crazy. Alabama has 90% blue chippers.
Yeah.
We've never seen a team with that percentage of blue chip athletes on their team.
And so how do you compete with that is sort of like Jack you were talking about. You don't have to just go full on trickery and try to just outplay everybody and confuse them and confuse yourself, but you do have to do something a little bit different. You can't just run right at them, even with Tank Bigsby, and expect to win the game. Where Auburn is right now, you've got to use your strengths, use your athletes, and try to do something different and look at history and see what has beaten these teams, what has beaten these coaches, and use your skill players because, again, we've talked about it. When you look at this 2022 roster and you start looking at the two deep for Auburn, there's a lot of talent on this team. You've got to find ways to utilize them and use them to your advantage because Auburn can win some football games. You just got to use the talent on your roster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's – sorry, go ahead, Card.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at these teams that you play, I mean, there's four teams in the blue chip ratio above you, but when you face teams that are more talented, you have to find ways to level the playing field, find equalizers. I think dual threat quarterback can help you do that, but, I mean, you can't say, hey – Auburn should compete with Georgia and Alabama when Alabama has what? Actually, Auburn has 50% of the blue chip ratio right at that threshold. So when Alabama has 40% more 4- and 5-stars, which you can't tell me that that's an even playing field. They should be able to compete when you're that outmatched.
But I don't think anybody's saying that.
You have to figure out a way to equalize that. And that's where I think if Robbie Ashford can continue to develop, he might be your guy in the back half of this year when you're having to play teams that outmatch you athletically.
And here's the other thing. You got to think about the Auburn defense, too. The strength of this team is probably going to be the defense. I would guess, and I don't have that in front of me, Carter, but I would guess that the majority of those, or the plurality, I guess, of those blue chippers are defensive guys. And I don't know if there's a way to check that or not.
It feels that way, doesn't it? I mean,
I would probably say so, yeah.
Especially, I mean, when you think about the fact that Auburn hasn't recruited the offensive line well. And meanwhile, on the other side, the defensive line athletically has been in a much better spot. They've had more success on the recruiting trail. And just at the trenches, I think that's probably your difference there. I mean,
and you look at Alabama and Georgia, they're a 4 and 5 star offensive line. I mean, that's exactly the difference, is where Auburn is missing a lot of times.
So I think where I'm going with that kind of is, if you look at the defensive side, you say, okay, we think we can compete a little bit more off of talent. What do we do on offense to kind of shore up that difference? You're right about Ashford, I think. I thought when we were talking earlier about kind of getting the running backs in space and throwing them the ball more, I think that's a little bit different from what traditional offenses might do. Another thing that people have called for years in Auburn is using the tight ends, use them down the seam, use them on crossers.
We saw it last year for the first time forever.
Yeah. So I think that's something that Auburn needs to focus on is, you know, I think your defense can match up. I think your offense has got to figure out ways to
Iron Bowl last year.
Yeah,
Exactly. I think, and we've talked about that coming into this season, is Auburn's defense is going to be the strength. It's going to be the place where we shouldn't have to worry a ton. But on the offensive side, whether it's TJ Finley, whether it's Robbie Ashford, whether it's Zach Calzada, whoever is playing quarterback, you've got to find a way to be different and for this Auburn offense to score some points, because that's where they ran into problems last year, was the defense kept them in football games late. They just couldn't score. You're not going to match up man for man, but you got to beat them somehow, some way. Let's take our first break here in this first hour. When we come back, we're going to keep talking Auburn football. Me, Carter, and Jack here in the studio. Stay tuned for the Friday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Back here on the Friday edition of On the Line, Jacob Goins, Carter Bird, and Jack Hutton with you in the studio here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Reminder of the busy, busy weekend here on ESPN 106.7. Football season is in full swing, along with a bit of baseball this weekend, right here on ESPN 106.7. It all starts on Saturday with an SEC doubleheader. South Carolina visits Arkansas at 10:30, followed by Florida playing host to Kentucky at 5:30. Those are the broadcast times. Kickoff will be 30 minutes after that right here on ESPN 106.7. That will be tomorrow. And then on Sunday, the NFL regular season kicks off this weekend with back-to-back games. Sunday with the New York Jets hosting the Baltimore Ravens at 11 on Sunday morning, followed by the Green Bay Packers heading to Minnesota to take on the Vikings at 3 o'clock later that afternoon. And why not some Sunday night baseball with the San Francisco Giants visiting the Windy City to take on the Chicago Cubs at 6 o'clock Sunday night right here on ESPN 106.7.
The biggest thing that I wanted to ask you guys when I walked in today, so on social media, there's all this stuff going on. Did either of you have Cam Akers in fantasy last night?
Apparently, I did not. But I played Josh Allen and Cooper Kupp. So there you go.
One of my opponents played Cooper Kupp, and I watched him score, 31.8 points or something like that? Yep. So I slowly cried. It was okay.
Well, I had that, and then I had Josh Allen scoring 30-something on me,
yeah,
too.
But yeah. I didn't have anybody go last night.
I also had Allen Robinson, which was a sad day
as well. Yeah, that is a sad one.
Yeah, that's tough. But
I've seen so much stuff today about, you know, people crying about how they had Cam Akers in fantasy, and he was supposed to have this huge comeback game, and then he had, 30 yards?
Yeah, he didn't do a whole lot. But busy weekend here on ESPN 106.7. Two college football games tomorrow, two NFL games on Sunday, and then topping it all off with Sunday Night Baseball, Giants and Cubs. So excited to have all of that for you over the weekend. So make sure you're tuning in for all of that. Big games around college football. But before the next segment, we'll get into our week two college football picks. Let's talk about this game tomorrow for Auburn. What needs to happen? Obviously, we expect Auburn to win pretty easily. But the eyes are not going to be on whether Auburn wins or not. It's going to be on a couple of position groups. My position group, outside of the obvious one of the quarterback situation, is the secondary for Auburn. Because in week one, against a Mercer team that doesn't throw the football a ton, they like to get their quarterback out and running a lot, they attacked Auburn's secondary a little bit. And there were multiple times where Auburn's secondary, when the ball was thrown their way, they had no idea. And they were looking at the receiver, never made a play on the football. And an SEC play, you're going to get picked apart or you're going to get called for a pass interference. And so that is the position I'm looking at tomorrow, is the secondary. Not too sure how much San Jose State's going to be able to throw the football, because I think Auburn's defensive line is going to have a really good day. But I am looking at the secondary for Auburn to see if they can bounce back from last week.
So on defense, I'm going to kind of piggyback off yours and say that I'm going to be watching the the defensive line, because we just talked to Brad Law. Brad Law said if the defensive line doesn't make an impact after San Jose State let up 7 sacks last week to Portland State, mm-hmm. and their offensive guards both weigh 275 pounds, if the Auburn defensive line can't take it to them, it's going to be a cause for concern. Last week, I think it was a little bit of Mercer's game plan to kind of keep the quarterbacks far away from Derek Hall and Eku Leota as possible. But I'm also highlighting this because it's going to help your one with the secondary, because they're going to be tested. San Jose State can't run the football. They ran for 49 yards last week against Portland State. What makes you think they're going to run for anything against this Auburn front that's that much bigger and exactly. that much more athletic? They're going to put the ball in the air. The DBs will be tested. The D-line will have opportunities to get pressure, get sacks. So I think those two very much piggyback off each other well. On the other side of the ball, I'm looking at the receivers. I want to see some of those names we've heard about all fall camp. I want to see them make impacts. Cam Brown, Coy Moore. Where are those guys? Because we didn't see them much in game one.
Yeah, I agree, Carter. I think the other guy that you didn't mention there is Landon King, who I really want to see. We heard all offseason about him.
All
you
spring.
Know, he's
going
to be this big-time slot guy, and then all of a sudden he comes out and don't even see him on the field. I'd love to see kind of what he can do after he made that big catch in the A-Day game.
After he made the unbelievable catch in the Iron Bowl.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
The one-handed snag in the Iron Bowl when your back's against the wall and fourth and goal. You have to have it to keep the game alive. And he went out and made a play. We know he's already shown it that he can make the big play in a big spot. I just want to see him out there. I bet you he's one of those gamers. One of those guys that once he's actually out there under the bright lights, he balls out.
You know what I'm starting to see a trend with Brian Harsin as we are one game in, and there's a handful of 10 or 12 guys where we're like, why didn't they play or why didn't they make an impact in week one? But I think this may be part of the plan. As weird as it is, I think this may be part of Brian Harsin's plan. When you play Mercer and then you play San Jose State back-to-back, why would you play everybody and show your entire hand if you don't absolutely have to? Is that a possibility of what we're seeing right now, that we are still figuring out what type of coach Brian Harsin is early on in the football season, where why would you play everybody and risk everybody getting hurt and showing everything you physically have if you don't absolutely have to, Jack?
I think it's a good point, because you notice, especially when they came back after the rain delay, you saw Auburn get a lot more vanilla on offense. Now, that didn't mean that they were running the ball every time, but if you look at some of the routes that they were running, there were a lot of go routes, a lot of just kind of posts, and so, more vanilla offensive style than anything. I look for Auburn to kind of do a couple of things out of some different formations that we saw in the Mercer game that maybe they didn't show. I don't expect, because they do it every year, I don't expect for there to be certain plays that are called until, the Iron Bowl, let's say. I mean, I think that Auburn does
Gus Malzahn
just about
was the
every
best
year.
At that.
Yes, I just There'd about be... every year Auburn mm-hmm. does something in the Iron Bowl that you thought, where's that been all season?
Fair. I do think I would like to see if Camden Brown, Coy Moore, Landon King, if those are going to be guys that you rely on down the stretch this year, mm-hmm. I'd like to see him in the game.
I agree.
I agree. Don't necessarily ask them to do a ton of crazy stuff, but let them get a couple routes in.
They need the experience.
Let them catch a couple balls.
Right.
Let them get in that rhythm, that flow that you can only get of being in a live game. So I don't want to hold guys out purely to hide them for Penn State, but is this your theory? So we can shock the world and you see Zach Calzada take snap one against Penn State.
Hey, you never know, right? You never know. But I think there is a point to be made where we are still learning who Brian Harsin is as a coach at Auburn, because sure, you can go back and look at what he did at Boise State, but we've been told multiple times, this is not Boise, Idaho. This is Auburn, Alabama, and it is very, very different. And so I do think we are still learning what Brian Harsin is trying to do at Auburn, trying to figure out what works and what's going to be successful, because again, his job is up for grabs this year.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're dead on about that. He's got to come out and win. There's just nothing to it. We can look good doing it 6-6, but he's got to be able to win this year. And I don't think that's necessarily a secret to any Auburn people. You know, I think one of the things that you had talked about earlier was kind of how does Auburn move forward with Brian Harsin even after all the stuff that happened in the offseason. That's going to be interesting to watch.
Auburn and San Jose State will give our predictions at the end of the show. 334-321-1390. We'd love to hear your predictions. More college football talk when we come back.
Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Friday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Jacob Goetz, Carter Bird, and Jack Hudden with you here in the ESPN 106.7 studio for the next 30 minutes. And we've talked a lot about Auburn football. Let's talk about week two, fellas, and make some predictions for some of the biggest games coming up this weekend. And we'll start with tonight. It's Louisville and UCF. UCF currently favored by 6 points. Louisville had a horrible showing against Syracuse last week. UCF now 1-0. What's your predictions on this game tonight? Does UCF or Louisville win? Spread if you want to go that far. What you guys got?
I think that after that week one showing by Louisville, a Syracuse team that was basically on life support from the past few years. They had that one awesome year under Dino Babers. And then they drum Louisville in week one. Give me Central Florida here.
Yeah, I'm taking the same thing. You know, Louisville gets out, and we thought that, okay, well, this is going to be pretty easy for them. And get drummed by Syracuse, like you said, 31-7. I mean, You know, it's not what you expected at all. I know Gus Malzahn usually loses a game he shouldn't during the year, but give me UCF.
Plumlee threw for 300 yards and 4 touchdowns last week and ran for 100 yards and a touchdown as well. Plumlee's like the dream Gus Malzahn quarterback.
Yes, I like UCF tonight as well. I think they cover. Give me UCF by a touchdown. That seems like a pretty easy money pick for me. As we move on into Saturday, looking at week two college football picks, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Who's your big winner this weekend? Who's your upset pick? All of that good stuff. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. 11 a.m. on Fox tomorrow, boys. Alabama and Texas. The Crimson Tide still favored by 20 is what the line is sitting at. It's been pretty steady over the last couple of days. Alabama favored by 20. Carter, you've got this as a blowout for Alabama.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just think that Alabama knows who they are. I think you're going to see this is the beginning of watching this Alabama team that is going to be a Death Star in the SEC West this season. I mean, although we do have it'll be an interesting matchup. There's talent on both sides, but last week, I mean, Quinn Ewers lost his truck and got towed. Well,
that's so funny. This week, I'm sorry, but that's so funny. After your very first game at Texas, you come out and your car's towed. Wouldn't that suck? I mean, that would just be terrible.
This week, he's gonna know what it feels like to get hit by a truck when Will Anderson's coming off the edge. I just don't see this going well for Texas at all.
But you forget. This is the year Quinn Ewers is focused. He's having fun. I wouldn't be surprised. No, not at all.
Who you got?
Oh, give me Alabama by a million. You know, I just don't think of any. I don't foresee anything. Every year we see Alabama go out and take on, I don't know if we want to say a big program, but maybe a big name program. And every year we think, oh, is there an upset in the cards this year? And it never happens.
Sark's already making comments to make you think that he knows that this thing's going to get ugly. By the way, do you know when the last time Alabama lost a regular season non-conference game is?
Oh, I couldn't tell you.
2007 against La Monroe. That's the last time they lost a regular season.
That's a
crazy
stat.
That's a heck of a reigning champion to be the last regular season non-con winner.
53 straight non-con wins in the regular season.
Good.
It's crazy. Look, here's my take on this. I said it a little bit back in hour number one. Everybody and their brother has Alabama winning this thing by 50-plus points, right? And I have Alabama winning. I think they're going to win by a lot. But I think Texas is going to at least get up and be ready to play this game. Can they match up with Alabama physically? Absolutely not. Can they match up with Alabama talent-wise? Absolutely not. But this is a huge game for Texas. The fans are going to be ready. The team's going to be ready. And I give them a little bit of credit for that. I think the first quarter, maybe even the first half, will be a little competitive. I like Alabama to be winning at halftime, probably by double digits, and then they pull away and they put it on them late. But I don't think, like I told Carter in the first hour, I don't see this where Alabama comes out and they're up 35-0 at the end of the first 12 minutes. I just don't see that playing out.
A few years ago, do y'all remember when Alabama went on the road to Ole Miss and first play of the game, Ole Miss hits an 80-yard touchdown pass, and then, like, they're going nuts in Oxford, and then they lose that game 42-7. That's what this one's going to be.
And you know, Jack, you were talking about Alabama playing some of these games. I hate to give credit to Alabama here, but I'm going to do it. They've signed up for some of these games, Texas, Florida State, those types of matchups early on in the season. And we know that
USC, a couple years ago.
We know that these schedules are made years and years and years in advance. So they are trying. It's not their fault that Texas, USC, and Florida State are terrible when Alabama just happens to play them. So you got to give a little bit of credit where it's due, but Alabama tries. They're just too much. They're too much for everybody else. I have Alabama winning this game against Texas. I guess they're going to cover the spread. I'll give it to them. Alabama by 3 touchdowns on the road at Texas sounds like a lot, but I just don't think it is. Give me Alabama.
Well, meanwhile, you have Auburn scheduling Clemson 10 years out before they're any good, and then all of a sudden they're winning national championships.
Exactly.
You're going up against them.
So. Exactly. As we move on can't catch a break. War Eagle to that. As we move on in some of the Week 2 matchups, 11 a.m. tomorrow, South Carolina and Arkansas. It'll be on ESPN. You can tune in right here on ESPN 106.7 and catch the radio broadcast. We'll start with Carter, South Carolina, Arkansas. We had a little bit of conversation about this one back in the first hour.
I think this game will find a way to be close. I think Arkansas being banged up in that secondary will be interesting to watch Spencer Rattler against. But at the end of the day, I trust KJ Jefferson more than I do Spencer Rattler. So I think Arkansas wins the game. I'll say South Carolina covers, but I don't buy in this South Carolina team. I think last year was a mirage, and it's going to play out over the course of this season.
Yeah, I could see that happening. I was fortunate enough to get to go to the Arkansas game last year. Got to see KJ Jefferson live and kind of see what he does. And I don't know. I'm not a believer yet. I don't think I'm a believer in Jefferson yet. I think he's a good quarterback. I don't think that the comment that I can't remember what the announcer was, but there was some comment about how KJ Jefferson is to Arkansas as Cam Newton is to Auburn.
That's been a very popular comparison.
And I don't think that
Jacob
that's
and I have called that just lazy.
Yes,
lazy for a lot of reasons.
I think it is too, and I don't think it's there yet. Arkansas's got a good back, Raheem Sanders, that can get north and south very well. He's pretty experienced. Spencer Rattler, I think, is going to have a couple of flashy moments throughout the year. He was a big-time athlete at a high school. I think he was a five-star athlete at a high school. And so, of course he's going to have flashy moments throughout the year, but I could see him being a little bit more inconsistent. I'll take Arkansas. I think it'll be an ugly game, but I'll take Arkansas.
The spread is between 8.5 and 9 points in favor of Arkansas. I like South Carolina to cover the spread. I could see Arkansas winning by about a touchdown like they did last week against Cincinnati, because like I talked about back in the first hour, Cincinnati had multiple chances to win that football game last week. And if Arkansas's defense, especially the secondary, doesn't step up, you could see where Spencer Rattler would start running the football. He can throw, maybe not the best in the conference, but he can throw the football. And if he can catch a couple receivers open, I think Arkansas could have some trouble. I like the Razorbacks to win at home. Give me South Carolina to cover the spread, though. KJ Jefferson, he looks better than last year, but I'm with you, Jack. I'm not 100% sold on this guy carrying Arkansas to an SEC West title or anything like that. I like Arkansas to win at home against South Carolina, but give me the Gamecocks to cover the spread. 8.5 or 9, whichever one you got. Moving on, we have a game where any other year in our lifetimes, fellas, we would not be talking about Vanderbilt in week 2, but yet here we are. They're playing Wake Forest at 2-0. Before this week, this seemed like a halfway decent matchup, but now that Wake Forest has their quarterback, I just don't think it's going to be that competitive. I really, really don't.
Carter looks super excited to talk about this.
He hated when I talked about Vanderbilt Hawaii in week 0. He was so mad about it.
People tried to make that into a game, and people don't realize that Hawaii right now is a smoldering crater of a football program for a whole list of
it's
reasons.
It's not in a good spot, is what Carter's trying to say.
Todd Graham left that place in the worst shape of any program in America. So if Vanderbilt had lost that game, then Vanderbilt needed to quit playing
football
forever.
But they didn't. They're 2-0.
And they're not going to win again this year. They're not going to win again this year. Literally 10 straight losses. I'll put money on it today.
They have number 23 Wake Forest at home tomorrow. What's your pick?
But, oh, my gosh. I mean, Wake Forest is going to kill them.
Wake Forest is favored by 13 right now.
They're going to cover that with ease. They're going to cover that with ease.
Jack?
Yeah, I'm not sure Clark Lee's I'm not sure his statement that Vanderbilt's going to be a championship program is going to come true anytime soon. You know, I like him. I think he's a good coach. I just think he's at a program that is hard to get off the ground at, and I don't see Vanderbilt being able to hang with Wake Forest.
I have Wake Forest as well. Like I said, before Wake Forest got their quarterback returning, I could see this being competitive, but I just don't think Vanderbilt's defense can hang with Wake Forest, and I just don't think Vanderbilt's got it in them to win this football game. I'm going to take Wake Forest. We'll make some quick picks here as we move on in the SEC. Missouri and Kansas State, who you guys got? Missouri on the road at Kansas State.
This is a Missouri team that couldn't stop the run to save their life last year, going up against a K-State offense with what, Adrian Martinez at quarterback from Nebraska, who runs really well, can run the football. Colin Klein calling plays, the famous running quarterback from K-State. K-State's going to kill them in this game.
I have Kansas State as a sleeper Big 12 team. I really do. Now, Oklahoma, I think, is, of course, they're going to be up there. Oklahoma
State. That
was
my pick, too.
Is going to be fine. I think they're a sleeper in the Big 12.
I think they're going to be sneaky awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
they could be pretty good. And so I think I've got them over Missouri, but their schedule lines up pretty well. You know, they do have to go on the road to Oklahoma, but they get Oklahoma State at home. They get Texas at home. And then they get their rival Kansas at home. I know that's not maybe the game that you want to have at home.
Make them play Vanderbilt.
Yeah, exactly.
And the loser has to get relegated out of the Power Five.
I'm going to break up this college game day curse that we've got going on with all picking the same. I'm going to take Missouri on the road for no absolute reason, just because you guys picked Kansas State. I picked Missouri in the ESPN 106.7 SEC Football Challenge. So if you want to go with me, you're more than welcome to. But I picked Missouri again. I have no reason other than they're going to score more points than Kansas State. That's it. That's all I got for you, boys. As we move on in some of these other games, the win is not in question, I don't think. But App State at Texas A&M, a game where a Texas A&M team we don't really know a whole lot about because their week one game was just so weird. They had a 2.5-hour rain delay. Haynes King, we don't know what we're getting out of him yet, but App State has given teams trouble so far. Not that A&M's going to lose, but what do you need to see out of Texas A&M to make you feel a little bit better about the Aggies?
Well, the offensive line looked bad last week. It looked bad, and that's going to be the only thing to watch in this game is the offensive line. Does it have a pulse? Does it bounce back at all? If it doesn't, it's going to be a long year, and they're going to go 8-4 like they do every year for all of eternity.
Yeah, and so I agree. I think, again, A&M's going to win, but we just don't know what we have yet. And this week will be a little bit better, and then they'll start getting into some SEC play. But one of the best games on the schedule for tomorrow, 2:30 on ABC, number 24 Tennessee on the road at number 17 Pitt. This game has a chance to score a lot of points here, gentlemen. Pitt just escaped a win in week one. Tennessee is supposed to have one of the best offenses in the SEC. Jack, who's your pick and why?
Yeah, I didn't believe it for a long time. Tennessee's offense was going to be all that great or something. But, you know, I liked Hendon Hooker. I like what he's been able to do with the offense so far. So I think I'm going to take the Vols going into Pitt and coming out with one. I know that was a raucous environment in the backyard brawl with West Virginia, but I'm going to go with Tennessee. I'm going to trust Josh Heupel on this one to maybe come out with
this. He said with a question mark at the end of it.
I sure did. But, yeah, I'll take the Vols in this one.
Anytime that the lower-ranked team is going on the road to the higher-ranked team and is almost a touchdown favorite, the rankings are – that exposes how overrated Pitt is. So give me Tennessee. Hendon Hooker's going to throw it all over the yard. They're going to try to go deep immediately, and this could be a game that could – if you get a Pitt turnover or two, this could turn – quickly in Tennessee's favor.
Tennessee's favored by 6 points on the road. Total is 64.5. I like Tennessee. Not too sure about the spread just because Tennessee's defense, I don't know what we're looking at yet. And Pitt, they can score the football. We're not worried about that. So I like this to be close, maybe a back and forth type of ball game. I like Tennessee to win the game. I like the over as well of 64.5. I think these teams are just going to go back and forth. And it may be a situation whoever touches the football last is going to win this game. So I like Tennessee. Tennessee on the road. They'll get out to a nice 2-0 start in this 2022 season. A couple more quick picks here. Colorado and Air Force. I'm going to throw a curveball at you guys. I have Air Force. Give me Air Force against Colorado at home.
Where did this come from?
Because I just read it and I wanted to pick it. I picked Air Force.
Yeah, Air Force. Air Force is better than Colorado. Colorado's horrendous.
I agree. Yeah, taking Air Force as well. See, I thought that I was going to be contrarian on that until I heard both you guys go. So, yeah, I'm taking Air Force.
Yeah, Air Force. 100% Air Force. I wanted to pick it, and so that's exactly what we did. Air Force, we're going to take them over Colorado. Looking at this is a week two slate.
Next up is Furman at Clemson.
There's a huge difference in that.
Paladins coming in on the upset.
There's a huge difference. Here's a good game, though. It's in the afternoon tomorrow. 25 Houston at Texas Tech. It's a weird game because Houston didn't look great in week one. They've got a lot of hype, but yet here we are with still some question marks around Houston. They're on the road to Texas Tech. Who you guys got?
I think we're maybe a little knee-jerk on Houston struggling with a good UTSA team. I bet you UTSA would beat Texas Tech right now. I'll take Houston here. I like Clayton Tune. I think he's a pretty good player. And, yeah, I mean, I'm going to go with Houston.
All the signs say to pick Houston. I know that they've had an upset. All the signs say to pick Houston, and I'm going to go directly against the signs and pick Texas Tech just because I feel like it.
There you go. See, you don't have to have a reason on this show. You can just do whatever you want sometimes. I'm going to have Houston on the road over Texas Tech. We have two more games to pick, plus the Auburn game. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the Friday edition of On the Line with some more college football picks. Stay tuned. You don't want to miss it here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up the Friday edition of On the Line, Jacob Goins, Carter Bird, and Jack Hutton with you in the studio for the next couple of minutes here on ESPN 106.7. Reminder, the After the Game show has returned. It'll be on tomorrow night after Auburn University's football game. It'll be Carter and Jack. They will be running After the Game all season long, taking your calls. So make sure you tune in for that here on ESPN 106.7. Immediately following all of Auburn University's all of Auburn University's football games. There we go. I got it out finally. So join Carter and Jack. You can call in and talk about the game's results, players, and all that good stuff. It's the ESPN 106.7 After the Game show. Also, Auburn High, they play tonight over on Wings 94.3, so make sure you tune in for that. You can catch Jack over there being the producer for Auburn High School football. You can catch Scott Bagwell and Rob Pate. They'll be doing the broadcast as Auburn High takes on Jeff Davis. But gentlemen, we have a few more games to pick. I actually lied. We have three more to pick. Kentucky at Florida, one of the biggest week two games that there is. And this game has gotten a whole lot bigger since Florida pulled off the upset last week. Carter, who's your pick and why?
Even though I think Florida, we got a little ahead of ourselves putting them all the way up at 12. I've been pretty back and forth on this one. I think Chris Rodriguez still not being back for Kentucky is the difference. I'm going to take Florida.
Yeah, I'm doing the same. I'm doing the exact same there. I think Florida had a big momentum win. I think they're going to keep it going. I think Napier's a really good coach. I've always been a fan of him. I was a fan of him when Auburn was first doing their coaching search. So give me Napier in the swamp.
The fact that LSU did not hire him is one of the dumbest moves I've seen in a long time.
I like Billy Napier. I loved when they hired him. And coming out and winning in your first game as a Florida head coach, beating a top 10 team in Utah, I think being at home helped them last week. I think being at home is going to help them again this week. I love quarterback Will Levis for Kentucky, but Anthony Richardson showed me something last week with Florida.
Really good.
He looked really, really good. And again, I think being in the swamp late Saturday night is going to hurt Kentucky. The noise is going to get to them. I like Florida in a close game. Florida's a 6.5-point favorite. Maybe they win by the touchdown. Not too sure.
I think it's going to be like a field goal game.
Yeah, I'm not going to touch the spread, but I like Florida straight up to beat Kentucky in the swamp on Saturday night. Two more games quickly here, gentlemen. We'll try to get picked. Mississippi State late Saturday night at Arizona. It's a tricky game. Can Mississippi State go on the road and get it done?
I mean, look, Arizona is one of the worst P5 teams last year. They've made significant improvement already under Jed Fish, but it's Will Rogers, it's Mike Leach, it's this Mississippi State roster that is crazy overlooked. They're way better than everybody thinks. I think they're a much bigger threat in the SEC West than people realize. They're going to go to Arizona and get that win. By the way, this game is played as late as it is. out of state law in Arizona because of heat advisories.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. That's cool. I didn't know that.
I have state winning. Jack, who you got?
I've actually got Mississippi State. So I was. That's another one where I was thinking I may be contrarian, but Mississippi okay. State. I like Mike Leach's offense. Of course, it gave us fits last year in Auburn, unfortunately. But Arizona had a little bit of trouble with San Diego State in the first week. Mississippi State, it's not like they're world beaters, but give me the Dogs. I'd have to go out there and get the dub.
I have State as well. One more game. We got a couple of minutes. Number 9, Baylor, on the road at number 21, BYU, 9 o'clock Saturday night on ESPN. This game is going to be interesting, and BYU has some injury problems. That's sort of tilting the fan base a little, and the picks a little bit as well.
This is the best game of the weekend. This should be game day. It's dumb that it's not in my mind. I've been beating the drum for BYU all week, and then a couple hours ago, you saw, I think it was Pete Thamel, break the news that both of BYU's starting receivers are out. I'm going to go with Baylor on this one for sure.
I like BYU still. I still think BYU is going to pull this out. They're at home. They've got a top 10 team at their place Saturday night. You just never know what's going to happen late night games like this. Even with the injuries, give me BYU to beat Baylor with the upset in week 2.
I've gone back and forth on it. I really have. I have a hard time picking against Baylor. You know, they're the Big 12 champion for a reason. They bring the extra quarterback, and as Carter was mentioning, you get a quarterback stepping in for Baylor now that is beating out your current Big 12 title champion. Winner. Yeah, and so I'm going to take Baylor. I'm going to take, and that may even be an upset by some people's standards. I know there's a lot
right
of
now
people, popular
well,
pick
BYU's,
is BYU.
BYU's yeah. favored by 3 still, yeah. even with the injuries to BYU's receiving corps. So you've got Baylor. Two of us have BYU. It's going to be a great weekend of college football, fellas. And after Auburn's football game tomorrow, tune in for After the Game right here on ESPN 106.7. It'll be our own Carter Bird and Jack Hutton. They'll be running the 2-hour show right here on ESPN 106.7. You can call in, talk about a win, hopefully not talk about a loss, talk about some players and position groups after the game on ESPN 106.7 after Auburn University's football game tomorrow. That's it for the Friday edition of On the Line. I'll be back on Monday. These guys will be here tomorrow night. Tune in for that. We'll be back on Monday. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.